and his tears go and fall away, fall away. Oh, may the last one burn into flames. Freedom, freedom, I can't move.
What's up, Wisconsin? Happy Tuesday, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We've got a great show planned for everybody today. If you live upstate or even in the western part of the state, you may or may not have an election today. We do here in Milwaukee County. Senator Lena Taylor from Milwaukee County, a state senator, was appointed to a judgeship by Governor Evers. And so today is the election, a special election to fill her seat. And we've been getting some breaking news reporting from some of the folks responsible for helping oversee polling places. We're going to be joined by one of those people at 3 p.m. The reporting, I have to say, is disturbing, and it reminds us yet again what all is at stake here in this next election cycle, not just about who's going to be our next president, but what sort of principles we stand for as a nation and as Wisconsinites. I'm also, Brian, I was so excited to hear about this. Tomorrow morning, my colleague Earl Ingram is going to have President Joseph Biden on his show, which I just think is absolutely fantastic. My congrats to Earl.
Earl's absolutely earned it. And when I went with Earl to see President Biden speak at the Black Chamber of Commerce, it was a parade of VIPs walking by and, you know, fist pounding Earl and saying hi to him. Like pretty much everybody from every level of the entire place was fist bumping Earl. And so I was like, yep, I'm pretty sure Biden's going to be choosing this guy first. So congrats, Earl. And that's going to be awesome.
Yeah, you're not going to want to miss that. Earl Ingram, he is on every morning, Monday through Friday, here on the Civic Media Radio Network from 8 to 10 a.m. You are not going to want to miss Earl's one of a kind here on our network, first for our network interview of Mr. President Joe Biden. That's going to be tomorrow morning. I always like to talk about Earl because without Earl Ingram, there is no Maggie Dawn on the radio.
That's true. I remember the day.
It is. Yes, it is a bit of a funny story. In fact, I think you, Brian, were also involved in having me on the radio a bit. For those of you who may have been listening to me for a while, I've told this story maybe two or three times over the years I've been on the radio. But if you are new to the show or new to my show specifically, new to the network, new to my show, I'll share this little ditty of a story because it's just good gosh darn fun, Brian. I was still Corporation Counsel for Milwaukee County at the time, and we had just filed, this would have been March of 2018. I had just filed the lawsuits against the opioid manufacturers and distributors on behalf of Milwaukee County. We had a big press conference, some really great coverage. Earl, basically what he's known for, one of the things that I think Earl is really uniquely gifted at is he really watches news very closely, and he will find stories in people who aren't in the headlines every day. And that was certainly me. I still am not a headline maker every day. And I certainly wasn't as the chief legal officer from Milwaukee County, but that back then was really big news. We were the first major jurisdiction in the state of Wisconsin to file that lawsuit. And we beat the state to it. We helped lead the Wisconsin delegation in those lawsuits. So it was big news at the time. And as Earl does, he tracked me down. And one day I went into work and there was a voicemail message for me from Mr. Ingram. And he said, hey, Maggie Dawn, I'm Earl Ingram. I'd love to interview you about the lawsuit. So just a couple of days later, I went on Earl's show. I was scheduled for what is very typically, you know, the one segment, which is in the ballpark of, I don't know,
10 to 15 minutes, maybe.
Yeah, like the longer segments, somewhere around 15 minutes. And I did the one segment. Earl asked me to stick around. And of course, you know me, Brian, I hate to talk.
I know.
So I, of course, said, well, yes, Earl, I'll stick around. And I think what was supposed to be one segment ended up being three or four, like a full hour of radio with Earl, yeah, because we ended up talking about all kinds of stuff. I grew up in the city. Earl and I figured out that we had a lot in common, that we both were big lovers of the city of Milwaukee and very proud of it. We ended up having this really expansive conversation on the radio.
And at the time, cool. I was hosting a show that came on right after Earl.
Yes.
And he grabbed me and he goes, you just leave her in here. I'm going to leave her in here for you. And you interview her now. And I was like, oh, okay. But I had listened to the interview on the way in and I'm like, yeah, that's great. Let's talk opioids. And we kept you over one more time. And then we were like, you should talk more. And then
which no one has ever said to me, but you both were kind enough to.
And then we got you in on Gritty brought you in on a show on the 6 p.m. And that's how it started.
That's how all this magic began. Yeah, it was. I remember I had a meeting or something that was, and I just emailed them and said, hey, I'm they still want me on the radio. I don't know why, but we're still talking about things. And I think I ended up hanging out for like an hour and a half on the radio, first with Earl and then with you. Earl then had me back because the punchline of the story, of course, that's the nice part. And you were generous.
Yeah,
Earl was very generous. And it did, you know, the dot, 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 the ellipse part is, yep, and here I am, right? But in the ellipse part, the dot, 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 was the fact that Earl had me back a couple of times, a few weeks apart. And he intentionally had me come back on a day where Earl was doing, I think, a mid-morning show at the time. And he had me come in on a day where he knew the then owner of the station, Mike Crute, was going to be in the studio that we used to record in off of Brady Street. And so he knew Mike was there, and Earl told me, I want you to meet Mike. And we had had a breakfast, and I had met some other people from what was then WRRD and Resistance Radio. So we had sort of hatched this plan. He was going to kind of spring me on Mike and say, Mike, you got to listen to this lady. She should be on the radio. And it was, I have nothing but love for Mike Crute. He's now one of your everyone's favorites on the Devil's Advocates radio station, which thankfully is licensed to Civic Media, and you can hear him here every day, Monday through Friday, from 4 to 6 p.m. and in the Madison Market WMDX from 3 to 4 p.m. But that was the whole cooked up plan. So I do the show with Earl, right? I get done. Mike's floating around the studio, and Earl grabs Mike and he says, Mike, you have to meet this lady. This is Maggie. She's great on the radio. You got to think about having her on the radio. And true to Mike Crute form, looked at me, Brian, and he said, who are you and what do you do? And I said, well, I'm Maggie Dawn. I'm the chief legal officer from Milwaukee County. And Mike looked at me and then derisively said, yeah, I don't do local people, and walked off. And Earl was so mortified. Oh, I'm so sorry, Maggie. And I said, that's no big deal. First of all, no one knows what I do. Corporation Council for Milwaukee. That's who knows what that is. But that was, I just chuckled inside, and Mike and I, of course, got to know each other, and he was generous enough with his airwaves back in 2018 to stick me completely green, had never done a radio show in my life, on the airwaves. I remember so you remember the show that I ended up doing, which was the 6 to 7 p.m. slot,
yeah,
on Thursdays and Fridays, because at the time I didn't quite yet have my sea legs under me as corp counsel for Milwaukee County. So I was only doing it those two nights a week. But I actually didn't start in that time slot. I started in the deserts of all radio deserts, ripping 2 hours from, I think, noon to 2 p.m. on Saturdays.
Lord.
And it is so for, I think it was months where I just did that on Saturdays, which basically was talking to myself. Again, I do love to gab. People have, you know, accused me of being a little bit of a chatty Kathy. Love to gab, but it is a different art form to gab into the ether with no one even nodding or looking at you like you're crazy for 2 hours with a mic in front of your face. But I'll tell you what, it was a great proving ground. I really enjoyed having to figure it out. I, of course, over-prepared those shows. I probably prepped like 3-4 hours to do 2 hours of radio. But I'll never forget my first episode that I ever did on Resistance Radio. Again, this was the old sort of precursor network to what has now become, under Sage Wild's leadership, the Civic Media Radio Network, and a statewide product. But back then, off that little radio station on Brady Street, my very first episode, obviously, we were 2 years into the Donald Trump administration. And I did a very sort of lengthy comparison. And I brought up, my then producer found some old Edward R. Murrow. And I did a really sort of lengthy comparison and kind of critiqued the media's treatment of Donald Trump back then. I hated the way the media was acting like it was all, everything's normal here. We, you know, it's just a little weird and different. And I hated that. And so I talked about that. And I eventually spun all of it into a reflection on Joseph McCarthy and McCarthyism. And I ended up reading from some of the Senate transcripts during some of those McCarthy hearings and the "have you no shame, sir" lines. And I said, I think that we are in this moment, and I think the media is abrogating its responsibility. And I think that this man has no shame, and we are on the precipice of something truly, truly dangerous to our democracy. It was like the very first thing I ever did on the radio was to lay that out as plainly as I could as a neophyte on the radio. And, you know, it doesn't strike me. I don't miss the irony or the full circular nature of the moment that here we sit, and those things that completely inexperienced me back over 6 years ago started saying on the radio is where indeed we find ourselves. Have Republicans no shame. We have wrought ourselves quite a disaster for our democracy. We're gonna talk a little bit more about it. I've had 24 hours to digest. Had some nightmares last night. Might talk about those too. But of course, I want to hear from you. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. We're going to talk about the immunity decision some more, and I'm going to talk about the debate from last Thursday night. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm going to keep on running because the winner don't quit on themselves.
Allow me to introduce myself.
And yada, yada, yada.
Well, I have a microphone, and you don't.
So you will listen to every damn word I have to say.
Brian and I are right here. We won't send you our address, but we're here in downtown Waukesha coming to you live across the state here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Just a heartbreaker yesterday for the Brewers, losing it in the 10th inning to the Colorado Rockies. I think those are the two words that I'm trying so desperately to say.
That type of shit.
Yeah, right. I can't begrudge them a loss in that fashion, certainly so, after they put up, I think it was 4 grand slams and 5 games.
Yeah.
I mean, the bats have been on fire.
So take that game and then multiply it by every game, and that's how the Cubs season is going.
So well, you're saying, very well.
I'm really looking forward to playing Philadelphia, the best team in the league right now. Tonight.
Yeah, that's absolutely going to be a rough series for the Cubs.
They don't have Harper or Schwarber, so the Cubs might lose like 5-3 rather than 10-3. So that's nice.
Yeah. How's that going to work out for you? Listen, folks, if you are heading up to the North Woods this weekend, do not worry. Civic Media will have you covered. Just tune into 98.3 FM out of Park Falls for all the coverage of the Brewers this holiday weekend as you go about your travel. I know that if I was heading up north, that's where I'd be catching the Brewers coverage there. When they're West Coast games, I mean, the far West Coast games, those are brutal, right? Because I'm staying up way past my bedtime. But even the Rockies game, when it went into extra innings last night, always a bit of a disappointment when they don't post the W after the extra innings and my lost sleep. But I did want to it's been 24 hours, a little bit more than that. I've been trying to absorb the immunity decision And the first thing I want to do is we had a regular caller yesterday, one of our conservative callers, and I called him the I word yesterday on the air. I called our friend CJ out, and the word I used was idiot. And I would just want to begin by apologizing for that. I don't think name calling is really helpful. I think that CJ says what he truly believes, that he speaks in good faith, and no one doing that and trying to engage, even when I think they're saying things that may be objectively incorrect or frankly dangerous for our democracy. Nobody deserves to be called a name on my show or any other. So CJ, and anyone that I may have offended by that, I'm going to start with an apology. I'm sorry, CJ. That said, I do stand behind the substantive critique and the concerns that I laid out yesterday. And I do want to remind folks that I think a lot of us really saw this coming. As I explained yesterday, I did not, and though I called that the Supreme Court was going to carve out some absolute immunity, I thought it was going, they were going to constrain their decision to core presidential powers, things like appointing ambassadors. But what the Supreme Court did yesterday was really create a presumption and perhaps even absolute immunity that reaches the outer limits of the official acts of a president. That's what's really got me spinning yesterday and today. But in fairness, frankly, to myself and many other Supreme Court watchers who did predict in large part these decisions, Brian, I thought we could start. This is me back in April. It's the day of the Supreme Court's oral arguments. As you all may recall, I was just as ticked off then as I was yesterday, because the oral arguments and what I was hearing from many of the justices on the court made it very clear to me that we were about to anoint a king for the first time in our nation's 248-year history, and I was upset by it. So I called back in April, on the 25th of April, the date of the oral arguments for the immunity case, what was going to happen. Let's take a listen to what I said back then in April.
And now, having heard what occurred this morning, it's very clear that these conservative justices, probably led by these five men, I think Amy Coney Barrett's going to be much more limited if she joins them at all, but these five men are going to create areas of action that a president can undertake as if he were king and accountable to no one, no law, no process. And for the first time in our country's history, our Supreme Court will declare that indeed there is one person that is above the law, and that is the president.
I hate it when I'm right on things like this. Those are statements that I make. I often prognosticate on this show, and many times, while I always like being right, I wish the Supreme Court would have proven me wrong. Brian, I think you've got one more cut of what I was predicting back in April.
This morning was a dark day in our democracy. It saddened me to listen to it. I hope what they decide to do is a much more limited ruling. In other words, we don't have to reach these fundamental questions. We don't have to declare new immunities. We'll just look at this case in a detailed way, and we'll send it back down to the courts. That's bad because it delays, but they'll let it go through. Here's why I know that's not going to happen. Repeatedly, by Justice Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Alito. Gorsuch said, we're writing a rule for the ages. Alito said, we have to think about our precedent setting here. Kavanaugh, we need to be concerned about the theory here, not the facts of this case. They're going to reach, and they're going to reach far, and our democracy will be weaker for it.
Gosh darn it. You know, again, I like to be right, but not on these things. And in fact, you could hear me grappling with what will the breadth of this ruling be. And again, yesterday, we were told this ruling really, what's very interesting about it is one of the things that I look for in Supreme Court opinions is the balance, right? Especially when they're declaring a new principle of law. In other words, here, as they declared a zone of absolute immunity unquestionable under the law, which relate to the core constitutional powers of a president. Then they also then went into this much more broad area of what is an official act and the outer limits of presidential official acts, and declared that indeed those might be absolutely immune as well. What you would have hoped to see was a clear analysis of the indictment and of the zone of official acts, and the court saying, well, clearly these allegations were personal acts, were unofficial acts. These allegations were unquestionably, or if the allegations proved to be true, outside of this zone of presumed immunity. But what really troubles me about the decision yesterday is that the court did none of that. In fact, it basically presumed that nearly everything that the president did and the allegations within the indictment, the court said, we're just going to presume all of that's immune. I want to talk with you all about what that means for Jack Smith's case. But we got to take care of a little business. So we're going to take a couple of important messages. I want to hear from you. We're going to talk about what does this mean for Jack Smith's case? What does it mean for the super secret spy documents case? The New York voter manipulation case and all the rest of it. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Join us after your farm update and these important messages. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842.
Rush Limbaugh was right all along. Conservative Republicanism is the answer.
Everything is awesome. Everything is cool when you're part of a team. Everything is awesome when we live in our dream. Everything is better when we stay together.
I think the Supreme Court justices are like popping bottles and everything is awesome when we stick together.
I don't know that they know joy or love.
Everything is not awesome. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm going to talk a bit about the implications or the immediate impacts of the Supreme Court's immunity decision for Jack Smith's prosecution, the super secret spy documents case that Donald Trump stole, all that good stuff. Here in this next half an hour, I do get to break some news. It is official as of moments ago, the sentencing of Donald J. Trump in the New York voter manipulation and fraud case is postponed. Late yesterday evening, Donald Trump's lawyers sent a letter to the judge overseeing that matter, Judge Mershon, asking for a postponement of the sentencing. Early this morning, Manhattan prosecutors agreed with Donald Trump's lawyers and said that they would not oppose postponement of the sentencing. And just moments ago, Judge Mershon agreeing to that postponement. A jury of 12 average Americans convicted this man of conduct that related to his campaign before he became president, as well as the ensuing cover-up that, yes, trailed into his presidency. And yes, the man cut some of the checks to help cover up the hush money payments to the former porn star Stormy Daniels. But that somehow undoes the underlying fraud and voter manipulation, which had to do with Donald Trump as a candidate before he became president. This is where we find ourselves. So the impacts of that decision yesterday, simply fast and furious. The other thing that I want to point out, and we'll get a bit into what it might mean for Jack Smith's January 6th prosecution, as well as the super secret spy documents case. That one's easy, right? Well, it should be easy, but we can easily predict what won't easily happen because Judge Cannon is overseeing the Florida super secret spy documents case. The super secret spy documents case, because Donald Trump stole them, was asked nicely to give them back for months and months and months, was then subpoenaed to give them back, and instead of giving them back, lied to his lawyers and told his two lackeys to move the documents around so he could store them in his gilded golden bathroom. He stole super secret spy documents that are the property of the United States. He was not president when that happened. He was out of office. So why would yesterday's ruling have anything to do with the super secret spy documents case? It shouldn't have anything to do with it, but no worries. The legal eagle, the hack otherwise known as Article III lifetime appointee Judge Aileen Cannon in the Southern District of Florida, is certain to entertain voluminous briefing and oral argument on the absurd question, and will probably end up hackily finding that there's some kind of immunity. Lord knows what. So now the Supreme Court is creating a circumstance where any president can steal our nation's military secrets and take them with them illegally after they leave the White House and do what with them? No one actually knows. But there's no question that there is 0% chance with 100% certainty that the super secret spy documents case will ever see the light of day before November, which means, of course, if Donald Trump wins, he kills the case and we never know what exactly happened there. That's another impact. But there was a lot of interesting punditry, in my opinion, yesterday afternoon and evening about what this case may mean for the January 6th case itself. Let's take a listen, Brian. We're going to take a listen to this as Lawrence O'Donnell last night on MSNBC talking about how this decision could actually backfire and hurt Donald Trump. Let's take a listen.
So the very bad news for Donald Trump in this decision today, and for candidate Trump, very, very bad, is that Mike Pence is going to walk into a federal courtroom, raise his right hand, take an oath to tell the truth, and testify against Donald Trump in this case in September. It's going to happen much faster.
You're saying it's an evidentiary hearing?
Absolutely. So what this is, we've created an absolute immunity on one paragraph of the indictment, applying to exactly one paragraph of the indictment. All of the rest of the indictment goes back to Judge Chutkan's courtroom, and she schedules this. This Supreme Court has ordered her to have a hearing about the evidence in the case to determine whether the act in question is an official act, whether it might have some kind of protection or not. And that's for everything in the case except for one conversation that he had with the acting attorney general.
The Department of Justice.
So what you're looking at here is basically there'll be some briefs on each side, and then the judge will schedule a day and say, okay, we start today. Mr. Smith, who's your first witness? And it's exactly like a prosecution. And for what Jack Smith's going to have to do, and sometimes in pretrial evidentiary stuff, prosecutors don't want to turn over all their cards. He's going to have to turn over every single one of them because the Supreme Court has said to him, in effect, we need to see every single one of your cards. So every witness he has, he's going to bring into that courtroom. They're all going to be under oath, and the defense is going to be able to cross-examine them. The defense probably won't bring in any witnesses at all, but you're going to see this incredible January 6th hearing on steroids, possibly for 6-8 weeks, September, October, maybe.
This is what former DOJ attorney Andrew Weissman had to say in response to Lawrence O'Donnell's statements yesterday.
I'd always thought the sort of silver lining, but it's a small one because the big picture here is this decision is horrendous for American democracy. But Lawrence is right. There is going to be a hearing, and the Supreme Court has actually said there has to be. So, and obviously there's going to be a lot of fighting about the timing of it, but Judge Chutkan does not have to wait the 81 days that she said she would wait for the trial. This is a hearing, so she can have briefing and she can set up a hearing with witnesses are called.
Okay, well, that certainly sounds hopeful, but I did address this briefly yesterday, and I wanted to just pause and give you my thoughts on this, and then we're going to go to the phones, 855-752-4842. That sounds hopeful, and certainly there will be some kind of hearing. But this seems to be a key point that both Lawrence O'Donnell and Andrew Weissman overlooked. And that is the Supreme Court's declaration, only five of them. This is the portion of the decision that Amy Coney Barrett refused to join yesterday. The Supreme Court's prohibition in its immunity decision that any
facts relating to acts which are absolutely immune, evidence cannot be presented about those facts. So what exactly, I mean, I don't know what Lawrence thinks he's talking about, but I'm just going to say this. And again, I hope I'm wrong. This is one of these prognostications that, again, I really hope I'm wrong. But what Lawrence was saying was deeply incomplete. Yes, there will be a hearing, but even the testimony of Mike Pence, in my opinion, is subject to challenge by Donald Trump's lawyers. Why? Because the Supreme Court yesterday said in its decision that conversations with the vice president may be absolutely immune. And if conversations with the vice president are absolutely immune, then they won't be permitted in any hearing. And if Judge Chutkan tries to entertain that evidence, wouldn't it be entirely predictable and exactly out of Donald Trump's legal playbook to file a motion to stop that evidence from being received, which Judge Chutkan will reject, which will then cause an interlocutory appeal to the DC Appeals Court, which will find that that's stupid and reject that argument, which will then cause Donald Trump to yet again appeal that ruling to the Supreme Court and challenge the very introduction of any evidence in the very hearing that the Supreme Court, in its terrible, no good, very bad decision of yesterday, seems to mandate. And here's where it gets really interesting, folks. While the initial read on the Supreme Court's decision yesterday is this profound expansion of presidential authority with little to zero accountability, what the Supreme Court was also doing at the same time it was creating an imperial presidency was that the Supreme Court was creating an imperial court. An imperial court that positions itself as the only arbiter of what is and is not immune in this vast expanse of non-core yet official presidential duties. Because the court again and again iterated that it will be the final arbiter, no other body in the land, no other court in the land between, again, what is absolutely immune as an official act and what lies outside of that, a category that they didn't even describe or acknowledge may exist. They will be the only ones that determine if the presumption of absolute immunity has been sufficiently rebutted, but they will determine the handcuffs that any prosecutor must place on him or herself when pursuing criminal charges against a president, just like the handcuffs that Jack Smith will inevitably face. What does all of this equal in the last sum? Is that the Supreme Court has effectively made Donald Trump completely 100% immune from not just the January 6th charges, but the super secret spy documents theft, because they will have slowed down these prosecutions to such a crawl that I don't think it is reliable or reasonable to say to the American people, as Andrew Weissman and Lawrence O'Donnell did, that we can absolutely count on some sort of evidentiary hearing where we will hear Mike Pence and other insiders in the Trump circle testify. Donald Trump will fight that to the death, because if he is able to win, all of that goes away the day he's sworn in. So it is not just an imperial presidency, it is an imperial court. And I must point out that the commentator last evening on MSNBC that got this 100% right happened to be a woman, not just a woman, a Black woman. Let's listen to what Joy Reid said in response to Lawrence and Andrew's commentary.
That debate is like 34 felony counts old, and it does not matter anymore. All that matters is that you do not allow the person back into office who will use this power that he's been given by this court, this imperial court, to implement that agenda they wrote down and published because they know that no one will stop them except voters. It doesn't matter if Biden is old. It don't matter. It don't matter if he's old. What matters is that the other guy wants to be a king, and this court has said, yes, you are a king, and we are the king's hand, and together, the seven of us will rule this country.
Make no mistake, that is the power that the court has reserved unto itself. It shall alone determine the scope of presidential immunity after the fact, at whatever pace it chooses. It alone can wave a magic wand and make anything it chooses by being so vague in its descriptions of what might possibly be immune, so broad in its descriptions, and so completely lacking in any specification of what is clearly not immune. There is an imperial court and an imperial presidency, a court packed by Donald Trump, a court who President Obama had a legitimate appointment deprived from him by the breaking of norms by the Senate-controlled and gerrymandered, excuse me, the Senate-controlled by Mitch McConnell, supported and enabled by the gerrymandered House of Representatives. That is where we stand in a country where seven people will decide to what extent a president will be declared above the law in nearly all matters. That is what we have. When I come back, I'm going to take your thoughts and calls here on the Civic Media Radio Network, 855-752-4842. That's 855-752-4842. I'm Maggie Dawn. He's Brian Kelly. Don't go anywhere. We'll take your calls and thoughts next here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Everything is awesome.
Too fast, too furious.
Welcome back, Wisconsin. It's day two of our collective reflections and questions and concerns about the Supreme Court's declaration that the United States, who knew, had kings. I missed that one in civics class, but apparently it was lurking there in the Constitution, despite nary a word to that effect found anywhere. So much for textualism, y'all. If you want to participate, tell me what you're thinking. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Let's go to Jesse from Madison. Your thoughts this afternoon.
Hey, thanks, Maggie. Well, you took most of the words out of my mouth. You nailed it. And gosh, I feel smart hearing you say that and being like, yep, nope, that's, yeah, shoot. I hate being right too. I think we should all at least take a little bit of solace that we already knew going into this that the Supreme Court's totally and utterly in the tank, just straight up. I mean, they're at the point where they're like baseball umpires who know that they made a bad call and then make a bad call the other way just to make it feel kind of even, like with the bump stocks and then with the, restraining order gun decisions that they made recently. Same thing. They're acting in their own political survival and not on any legal theories that they used to maybe have once upon a time. All that's completely out the window. In fact, I think if Biden had not done that horribly in the debate, I think you might have seen a slightly different ruling come down where it wasn't this official act craziness, because they're hedging their bets and they're like, well, if we're going to get a Trump, we better kiss his boots extra hard. I think at the end of the day, though, that the Supreme Court is still not the highest in the land, and their hubris will hopefully get the best of them. The highest court in the land is the court of public opinion, and that happens at the ballot box. And even though I know a lot of us, and I'll leave you with this, some people have been posting, I'm sure you've seen it too, trying to take some comfort in the, well, if presidents are immune, then Biden could call SEAL Team 6. And no, that would be horrible. Also, but what he could do, which would most certainly be an official act, is he could enforce the Voting Rights Act and send out the National Guard to establish more and more polling places so people aren't waiting in line.
Interesting thoughts, Jesse. I would actually compare the current Supreme Court to the NBA referees that actually fixed games back in the early 90s. Like, that's what it more feels like. You know, they might actually let a couple of calls go to the other team, but they'll make sure the fix is in for the actual game. And
they'll cover the spread, which was the real rub.
Still mad about the Kings Lakers. Still mad about the Kings and Lakers.
Can't blame you for that, Brian. Thanks so much for listening and calling. Jesse, appreciate you. Dick from Madison, you're on the air. What do you have to say, sir?
I couldn't agree with Jesse more. After yesterday, we are down to the court of public opinion. By that, I mean groups like the Lincoln Group, the Biden campaign. There's lots of people who want to talk, correct? How many different people from his former cabinet that are willing to just go on record as saying this guy's a nutcase, shouldn't be anywhere near any of these nuclear codes? So get him on tape and get commercials rolling nonstop. They have the money in the coffers. Get after it.
Yeah. Dick, couldn't agree with you more. I think I also envisioned in my head someone with like a really creepy voice doing voiceover of portions of the decision and then saying like, that's a king, everybody, because that's what we've got here. Bill from Oconomowoc, what do you have to say this afternoon, sir?
Great show, Maggie. Jesse kind of took a little wind out of my sails, but I've got another statement I want to make. I'm 75 years old. Our country is approaching 250 years old. I never thought in all my years, and I met plenty of politicians in my lifetime, plenty, that I would hear the Supreme Court make it easier for a convicted felon to hold the office of president than prevent it. And as the other gentleman mentioned, Biden has a lot of power. I hope he's got the right people around him to wield that wand that he has, use the crown that he has, and put the convicted felon where he belongs, in jail or out of the system, because he is a clear and present danger. Thanks, Maggie.
Appreciate your call, Bill. Be safe out there driving. It's an interesting discussion point. We'll get into it in the second hour of the show this afternoon about Joe Biden's continuing candidacy. I have an opinion. I'll give you my opinion before the end of the day today, but let's just throw this out there. Boy, would a lame duck Joe Biden be unbridled, unburdened in terms of taking advantage of the Supreme Court's ruling. Now, I don't mean to encourage or suggest anarchy or things that will degrade the norms of our country even further, but a lame duck who's not running again, it just increases options. Drew from Lake Mills, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show. What do you have to say, Drew?
Hey, Maggie, I got a question about, let's say Biden wins again, which we hope he does, but then tell me about how it works to go about like packing the court after that. I'll hang up and listen, and thank you very much for explaining all this to us.
Sure, Drew. I think we actually need to do an entire show about what packing the court would look like. It likely would require not just the president to take some steps, but likely an act of Congress as well, which makes what is going on down ballot in both the Senate and the House extremely important in the fall. Remember, every single member of the House of Representatives is up for election, and 23 Senate Democrats are also up for election this fall. I'll also note 11 Democratic governors. But yes, I think we need to spend some time talking about what packing the court would look like. The easiest, most straightforward way to rein in the power now accumulated and arrogated to itself by this imperial court are term limits for Supreme Court justices. But we've got, you know, the old Article 3 in the Constitution, so it's going to take some serious doing. That is its own topic unto itself. Jeannie, you've got about 30 seconds. What do you have to say, my friend?
They made the rules. They changed the rules. Abuse of power by the Supreme Court. The president needs to stand up and protect democracy any way he can.
I'm with you, Jeannie. We're almost at the point of by any means necessary. We'll talk about it more in the upcoming second hour of the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We got a special guest that's going to come on and tell us what the GOP is doing right now today to meddle with our elections and deprive you of your vote. My name's Maggie Dawn. He's Brian Kelly. Don't go anywhere. News, weather, and sports are next. And we'll be back here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Republican. Republic will be reorganized into the First Galactic Empire!